Now, on this programme, we've spoken a lot recently about homelessness and the need for social housing, but there was one controversy earlier in the week that we didn't get a chance to cover, and we're going to do so now with Owen McDermott, who is Managing Director of the Communications Clinic, and of course, our new Early Breakfast presenter, Pamela Joyce. Thank you both very much for being with us today. And thanks for staying up so long after work this morning.
12 hours counting.
Great.
Anyway, Owen, tell us about the story. I was out of the country on Monday, didn't come until Tuesday, only heard about it then. The story of Tipperary County Council providing traveller accommodation which those who were to be in receipt decided was not suitable.
Yeah, there's six new houses lying empty outside Thurles because members of the travelling community are refusing to move in because those houses do not have stables for the horses that the travellers own. The travellers are currently on a site across the road, and there are paddocks and stables there, apparently. This is obviously in certain quarters causing a lot of anger. So, for example, one of the councillors from Sinn Féin called this a thundering disgrace. And I can understand how, at a glance, people looking at this, thinking of the amount of people on housing lists, that are people living in hotels, will get very upset by this.
Yeah, and because, I mean, put it this way, if you were offered a house and said, I won't take it because I don't like the parking, there's not a big enough driveway for my car outside, well, wouldn't they not be told, get a grip on yourself?
I suspect that would be, and I, not being familiar with the intricacies of the negotiations going on between the travellers and the county council, but it would seem that there is some negotiation going on around what's happening with the homes and with the horses. I think what we can be sure about this story and this situation is it's going to do nothing to enhance the relationships between settled people and the travelling community. So, for example, I would guess that in the next few minutes your text line is going to heat up with some text that you're probably not even going to be able to read out, because we Irish people have a slight blind spot for how we talk about a certain group in our community called travellers.
Okay, but hold on, Pamela. Is this really anything to do with travellers? Is this just the fact that if there are many of us who believe in the provision of social housing, that it is something that the state has to do for people who are not in a position to be able to afford for themselves, but that with those rights, if you give them, that there come responsibilities, and if you've been given a house, you can't necessarily say, well, yes, I also want stables for my horses.
Absolutely. I think it works both ways, Matt, and I think Sinead Carr, who's the Director of Services for Housing, said they will meet to discuss the issue, but they have said no land will be provided whatsoever. But she also said the council said the agreement made with the families over a decade ago was that it would provide suitable housing for these people. And necessarily, knowing that horses are a massive part of travelling culture, this might not be construed as suitable for these people because it is a part of their culture. And if this was made over a decade ago, they would know they should have potentially had plans in place to say, okay, we know this is part of their culture, so maybe we should look at including this in it. And the fact that 1.7 million was spent and this wasn't even looked into is quite a bizarre...
It's an enormous amount of money. How many houses are provided?
Oh, six homes. And that's
six homes for 1.7 million?
Yeah, so it's a fair chunk of change. And you would, if you were to compare the price of the homes in Thurles, so for example, that they would be on the expensive side based in Tipperary. So you can understand why people are going to get very upset by this, very cross by this, particularly where they know of people, whether that be themselves or their families or people they know living in hotels or without a home. And that's why you would have to have certain great sympathy for them, and you can appreciate the anger. However, I think we do need to understand again that there may be some situations where, given the cultural significance of horses, for example, that you could appreciate why this group of people may not want to move in.
Okay, and I'm not trying to be smart in any way, you know, but lots of people love animals and would love to have pets maybe in their apartment blocks or whatever, and they're not allowed to. That there are certain trade-offs you have to make in life that you're not able to have everything that you want if you can't afford to provide it for yourself. Pamela?
Yeah, I just think it's part of a culture. Having a pet is a luxury that some people would like to have, but I think it is very much part of their culture, and it has been for a long, long time. And I think it's a shortcoming of the government to not take that into consideration when planning these houses over a decade ago, that they didn't think, okay, maybe let's make the houses smaller to provide for this. Let's not overspend on it, but let's maybe make the houses smaller so that we can provide it, because currently there are 50 adults and children living in mobile homes across the road from the housing, and as it's understood, the horses are, the stables and paddocks are on land which is understood to be in private ownership. at the moment. So I just think it's a shortcoming of the government that they didn't think.
Okay, but here's another one. Listener says, if you have a dog, should the council provide a kennel out the back? Can I have one of these houses, please, says this particular. Houses are part of their culture, so is travelling. So why are they travelling instead of getting houses, says another listener. I am being careful in some of the ones that I'm reading. Affordable houses, and you can afford horses, says another listener. If these are supposed to be socially affordable houses provided, how can you afford to have a horse?
Yeah, that leads us down into a lot of stuff that people will say about travellers in terms of how can they afford bits and whatever those things are. I think, of course, there would be people come down the side of, if I have to sacrifice my dog, surely people would be able to sacrifice their horses. I'm sure within the negotiation where both parties are hoping that the houses would be used, that I'm sure with sensible people they'd be able to come to some conclusion that allows perhaps the horses stay on the land that they are on and the people moving into these homes.
Brendan says it's part of my culture to live in a house, but I can't afford it. Let's move on. Pamela, this sort of shocked me, the story that came of an Irishman who was arrested after he admitted causing criminal damage at Auschwitz.
Yeah, this shocked me. Like, my mouth fell open when I read this. It's bizarre. So a man has pleaded guilty to causing criminal damage. He scratched his name into the wall during a visit on Sunday in Auschwitz.
Why?
So apparently he saw other people had done so and felt it was the right thing to do, whatever that means.
Hang on. I can't understand how you would ever consider that you should leave your mark on Auschwitz, a place where over a million people died, and you thought that was a good idea. You know, where you walk into loads of places and see writing on it, you see graffiti over it, you don't necessarily say, that's what I'll do. The idea then that you are going to this place that is kept there to remind us of the kind of the man's inhumanity on man, and that you would leave your mark there and graffiti the place, I think is incredible, and just you can never underestimate the stupidity of people. I actually think, in fairness, that the Department of Foreign Affairs, in fact, should probably apologise on behalf of Ireland for this Egypt.
Yeah, we don't know who he is. He hasn't been identified, has he?
No, he hasn't. And he doesn't have to go back there. He will be appearing in court next week, but doesn't have to go back. But it reminded me of, there was an Israeli writer called Shahak Shapira last year. And what he did was people taking selfies. There's a lot of people posting on Instagram with selfie sticks and doing yoga poses and stuff in Auschwitz, which is absolutely disgusting. But what he did was he started a website called Yolocaust, which is basically he took these people's images that they had posted online and superimposed them into actual archive images of Auschwitz to kind of show the juxtaposition between, you've no idea what you're actually like, this is horrible things went on here, fact that you're taking a selfie here.
I've never been, and it's actually something that I've meant to do, and maybe even bring some of my children just to give them an appreciation of the horrors of 20th century Europe. But anyone that I know who's been there said that it's just very deeply moving. It's something that actually can leave you almost sort of like numbed for hours and days afterwards. So that somebody would actually have the experience, well, I'll like take selfies or I'll start scratching my name into the walls. What does that say about a person like that?
No, it's awful. I was actually recently in Kilmainham jail a few weeks ago, and it was such a powerful experience. Like, the thought of even, I didn't even think that I had a phone in my bag. I actually felt like I was being intrusive just by being there.
Yeah, so you're concentrating on the experience.
Absolutely, and thinking about what went on here rather than, this is an amazing selfie, I'm going to take a photo here and just be completely disrespectful to whatever happened here.
Funny you should mention that now, because actually during the summer we went to the 9/11 Museum in New York and never even thought of actually taking on a camera. No, none of us, none of my five children, my wife, myself, now that I remember, have any photographs in there because it never occurred to us to actually, it just wasn't the thing to do.
I think as well, Matt, though, there could be something to that, that 9/11 is still quite current in our psyche. We kind of still remember it, whereas there is a seeping that I think people forget the horror that the Second World War was and that the concentration camps were. If we look, for example, at why the EU was created, it was to ensure that we can never go back there again. And we see with the likes of Brexit and the things that people are saying that we seem to have forgotten that, and the behaviour that, whether it's a selfie stick or graffitiing and putting your name there, I think that there's a sense that people are forgetting about the horror of what had actually happened.
It's almost like it's a bucket list thing, like, I'm here, I better go see this and take a photo and show everyone that I went here, I'm so cultured or whatever, but not actually taking in the significance of what you're actually seeing and where you actually are.
Yeah. Funny enough, though, Owen, you're saying, you know, 9/11 is so recent to us, but actually my children, most of them weren't even born at the time. Yeah. So it was like an education to them, as something they weren't really familiar with, but yet they were awed by the experience, and it is so, so well done. It's something I'd recommend to anybody going to New York, that they would visit the 9/11 Museum. A listener says, horses would have been part of traveller culture when they were needed to pull caravans. They don't need them to pull a house. An enormous reaction to that story about the houses in Tipperary for the travellers. Majority of people saying take the houses, and if they won't take them, give them to somebody else. And here another listener says, was in the 9/11 memorial last month, definitely the most moving experience I've ever been to. It was almost as if you could feel the atmosphere of what it had been like there on the day. Well, something that I would certainly strongly recommend to anyone going to New York. Anyway, we still have Pamela Joyce and Owen McDermott with us. Pamela, what's this about women in their 50s who have babies apparently risk traumatising their children? In what way? Is it because of the birth at the age, or is it because of the age gap as the children get older? What is
it? So initially, I read that, I assumed it was to do with the medical side of it, the birth, whatever it may be. But it actually turns out that apparently the child will suffer because their parent is that bit older, that it's traumatising for a child to potentially have to look after their parent when they're in their teenage years, or that to lose a parent at a young age, which I think has nothing, I mean, obviously it's more likely if the parent is older, but it can happen at any stage. And I think it's actually more traumatic to a child to have a parent or a mother who isn't ready, who maybe has a child younger but isn't ready at that age, you know, to have to be born to someone who's just not able to be a mother just yet.
It's also one of the most sexist headlines ever. It should be kind of parents if you're going to have it in any way. Why, yeah, you know, fathers, what's the difference between a mother and a father if they're going to pass away? I think nobody said that to Mick Jagger, who I think was 73 when he had his last child. Rod Stewart was in his 60s. Trump and Barron, I think Trump was 60 when Barron came along.
Is that a bit irresponsible on the part
of
them?
I think if you look at the average life expectancy is in the mid-70s now, so you can say, well, like, having 15 good years, you're probably thinking, no, that's, you could decide that's not so bad. I think when you get up to 80, 90 or the Hugh Hefner way, you'd probably think, yeah, that's a bit excessive. But this article is suggesting that 50 years of age is irresponsible. They cited Janet Jackson as making it seem acceptable to have children in your 50s. And I just thought that if you were looking at it, it was a sexist piece, but actually as well, given that life expectancy is increasing, that having a child around that age wasn't that bad a thing at all.
One of the favourite things that I read in it said that the older parents reported being exhausted looking after newborns. I don't know anybody of any age who isn't exhausted looking after a newborn. It's a bizarre statement to make.
Okay. And I think if the child, though, is living in a loving, happy household, the fact that the parent happens to be 50 rather than 30 is beside the
point. Pamela, are you a fan of Kanye West?
I was back in the day. I can't
you
say
were,
I'm
and you're not anymore?
Not a fan of Kanye anymore.
He's questionable. His music... not for me so much anymore.
Right.
But he did visit Trump.
Yes, and it was a pretty bizarre meeting with Trump, wasn't it?
Very strange.
We're going to hear edited highlights of some of what went on between Kanye West and Donald Trump.
I don't answer questions in simple sound bites. You are tasting a fine wine. It has multiple notes to it. I love Hillary. I love everyone, right? But the campaign, I'm with her, just didn't make me feel as a guy that didn't get to see my dad all the time, like a guy that could play catch with his son. It was something about when I put this hat on, it made me feel like Superman. You made a Superman. That's my favorite superhero.
The liberal would try to control a black person through the concept of racism because they know that we are very proud, emotional people. So when I said I like Trump to like someone that's liberal, they'll say, oh, but he's racist. You think racism can control me? Oh, that don't stop me. That's an invisible wall.
The problem is illegal guns. Illegal guns is the problem. Not legal guns. We have the right to bear arms.
He can speak for me anytime he wants. He's been a great guy. He's smart cookie. Smart. He gets it.
You know I love you.
I know. I don't want to put you in that spot. But
no, I'm standing in that spot. I love this guy right here. Let me give this guy a hug right here.
But that's from the heart. Special guy.
Maybe now I understand why he doesn't feature too much in Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Okay, what the hell was that all about?
It was a profile-raising exercise. I think profile has now become a tradable commodity where credibility used to be. And if there's two people who know the importance of profile, it's Kanye West and Donald Trump. And I would suspect Kanye, having hung around with the Kardashians for a while and who is married to a woman who got her break from a sex tape, I think that Kanye has come to realise that having a bit of profile can help him sell his runners, can help him sell his crappy music, as Pamela has suggested, and that he can see that his relationship and support of Donald Trump is giving him exactly that. I think Trump looks at him and says, I can probably get a bit of profile too out of Kanye, and even if I can get a smidgen of a percentage of the African-American vote from my relationship with a respected member of that community, why not?
he actually shut up for a while too, Trump.
Oh, that. 10 minutes and let Kanye go for it. And again, I think if you look, Kanye, we mightn't agree with it, but Kanye spoke about how Trump's campaign connected with him and Hillary's campaign didn't. I think that's pretty common in the US.
Melania, of course, Donald's wife, went to Egypt recently as part of a tour, and she went to the pyramids and she wore... Can you describe the outfit that she wore?
The only way I can describe it is the Michael Jackson Bad video. Okay. It was a white suit with a white...
I thought it was more kind of like Alison Doody in A View to a Kill or something
bizarre.
Like that. Or not one, the Indiana Jones movie, you know? And when there was full of Nazis and stuff. What a bizarre outfit. But this woman is a strange woman. Let's hear a little bit of the interview she's given to ABC News when she talked about why she's anti-bullying and doesn't trust some of her staff in the White House and her take on the Me Too movement.
I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
You think you're the most bullied person in the world?
One of them, if you really see what people are saying about me.
Has he had people that you didn't trust working for him?
Yes.
Did you let him know?
I let him know.
And what did he do?
Well, some people, they don't work there anymore. And it's very difficult sometimes because I'm so busy with my office, I don't get involved with West Wing.
Do you think there's still people there that he can't trust?
Yes.
Still working now?
Yes. I support the women and they need to be heard. We need to support them. And, you know, also men, not just women.
Do you think men in the news that have been accused of sexual assault and sexual harassment have been treated unfairly?
You need to have a really hard evidence that, you know, that if you're accused of something, show the evidence.
Okay. Are a bit all over the place. When she's been bullied, do you think she mean by her husband? He's the biggest bully on the internet, on Twitter.
Yeah, I would suspect so. And I think if you were to look at the relationship between them, anytime they seem together, she doesn't look particularly happy with life. I think, commenting on, and she was at the launching an anti-bullying initiative that was kind of suggesting to improve people's online behaviour. Her husband's online behaviour is not the best. He threatens people, he comments on people, he negatively presents people. CNN did a piece that said he had attacked 97 individuals directly, mostly men, and that didn't account for the whole entire NFL player body. He's attacked Hillary. He even, in fact, promised to attack a nation of 22.5 million people in North Korea. So I think if we look at Trump, his use of Twitter wouldn't fit with his wife's suggestions.
Mm-hmm. I think the most striking thing I took from this is how incredibly well media trained she is now as of recently. She said that BBS is focusing on online behaviour and social media, and the interviewer was asking her a lot of questions, kind of hard-hitting questions, and she was answering the questions but not answering them. She was giving a response but not saying anything. And he brought up the whole Stormy Daniels thing and the infidelity and said, you're not the first lady who's had to deal with these claims. And she just said, it's not a concern of mine. I'm a mother and a first lady. I have more important things to worry about. And she's giving these
answers.
A very
practiced line, obviously.
Yeah, she's giving, everything is very practiced. She's giving a response to the question without actually giving away anything.
Yeah, and in fairness, that whole morality thing of Donald Trump being immoral or a cheater, like, he's not the first US president. The only kind of ones that I can think of that had any sort of morality are probably Obama and Jimmy Carter. The rest were philanderers, like starting back at Kennedy, for example, and the rest, you know. So Trump and his behaviour, yeah, we laugh at it and sneer at it and aren't too happy about it, but he's not the only one.
Of course, he's also described the media as enemies of the people, and there's an extraordinary story that has emerged this week from Turkey in the Saudi embassy where a journalist for the Washington Post is believed to have been murdered on the grounds of the Saudi. Now, it's a complicated story, but can you summarise it briefly, Owen, please?
Okay, this gentleman's name is Jamal Khashoggi, and he is a journalist, as you said, from the writes for the Washington Post. He is said to be disappeared. Most people think he's been murdered by agents of the Saudi state.
About 14 of whom had flown in
and
that
only
day.
Hung around for a couple of hours and then flew back out. He was invited to a meeting in the consulate in Turkey, the Saudi consulate, and then never reappeared. There is said to be a video of his murder, and it has been described as being quite like Pulp Fiction, where they dismembered his body. This is obviously would throw up an international crisis. For example, you would suspect the president or prime minister of Turkey to give out, but Erdogan is treading carefully enough around this because people might know that the Turkish economy isn't in great shape and the Saudis have great influence on it. You would think the Trump administration might say something, but they are so wedded to the Saudi government and Kushner having a very good relationship with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and also then Saudi money being pumped into the US, we can't expect actually really anything to happen from this, bar it being a horrific story.
Yeah, I think there's actually quite a lot of Western people are pulling out of a major investment conference that Saudi Arabia is running, but the American government has decided it will continue to attend. But in fairness, Pamela, dreadful and all as this, wrong as all is, all sorts of accommodations are made all the time with countries like Saudi Arabia, even by countries like Ireland, and we make accommodations with China, even where there are human rights abuses.
Yeah, Mike Pompeo did call on Saudi government to cooperate in a full investigation and to be very transparent about it. But again, people are treading very, very carefully around it. But it's not the only journalist murder this week or in the past couple of months. The Committee to Protect Journalists said at least 43 journalists have been murdered this year as a result of their work. We had the Capital Gazette shooting in June of this year in Maryland, and Bulgarian television journalist Victoria Marinova was found dead on Saturday. So the couple of days before she was found dead on her last television show, she introduced two journalists who were investigating suspected corruption involving EU funds and said her own show on the local television station would be carrying out similar investigations. Now, no link has been established, but it kind of raises the question of freedom of speech and what are people doing to keep people quiet.
And meanwhile, here in Ireland, we now are going to have exorcisms.
Oh, yeah. This is brilliant, and because people are approaching Reiki now, I think this is a friend of the show, Matt, Bishop Alphonsus Cullinan.
Down in Waterford.
Yes, indeed, down in Waterford. So the people of Waterford are going to need exorcisms because too many people are getting Reiki. I think if you were to look at the teachings of the Catholic Church, the bishop is following them to the letter. We all might think it's a bit crazy, but perhaps organised religion generally is a little bit crazy and just there to organise us.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Owen McDermott from the Communications Clinic, and Pamela Joyce, presenter of Early Breakfast here on Today FM. 087-4100-102 is the number for your comments by text or by WhatsApp. We're back with the 5 of 5 after this.
The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
And the Volvo Hybrid range. Outstanding fuel economy and ultra low emissions. Power without compromise.
Hi. You're in the car again with your silent 15-year-old. And I know you're thinking, she's going to have another go about listening. I'd never have a go. I know it's hard. And you're probably thinking everything's grand anyway. But listening isn't just for when there's a crisis or a disaster. It's any time. And the thing is, if you listen to something small, it can stop it becoming big. So go on. Ask them how they are. And listen.
Lidl support Jigsaw, and Jigsaw supports us all by helping us be the one good adult in young people's lives. Pick up your Lidl Book of Listening in store throughout Mental Health Week.
You've just clicked on Clayton.
Did you pack your black shirt?
Hello, welcome.
And now, you've arrived. And it's the moment your head sinks into the crisp, plump pillow. On a bed that you'll never have to make. So, why don't you click on Clayton and book your autumn break? Clayton Hotels, where every moment matters.
On Saturday, October 20th, European rugby returns to Thomond Park. See Munster face old rivals Gloucester in this crucial Heineken Champions Cup clash. Be there to support the men in red. Your support makes all the difference. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. Tickets from only €20 at Munster Rugby.